yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and to give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-1132. Gregory M. Dearlove, Petitioner versus Securities and Exchange Commission. Mr. Zephyr Neary, Jr. for the petitioner, and Ms. Hardin for the respondent.
Thank you. Let me note as you're coming to the podium that we have Judge Ginsburg, who has joined us by telephone. Judge Ginsburg, are you there?
Yes, thank you, Judge Griffith. Good morning, counsel.
Great. Okay.
Good morning.
You may proceed.
May it please the court. Ben Zephyr Neary from Hodson Russ on behalf of Petitioner Gregory M. Dearlove. This is an appeal from an administrative order of the SEC which denied Petitioner Dearlove, an accountant, the privilege of appearing or practicing before the commission with the right to reapply after 4 years. The central issue, dispositive of this appeal, is whether proof of common law negligence was required to establish a Rule 102E violation. The SEC's position is that it need not apply a negligence standard, and therefore it did not do so in this case.
Is that right? I mean, in their red brief at 32, as I read it, they agree with you that a gas violation alone doesn't support a conclusion of improper professional conduct, that you need a particularized finding of negligence. So I'm not certain they disagree with you on that.
Well, Your Honor, their brief is circular in that point, and specifically, the brief concedes that a gas violation alone is insufficient and that it must prove an unreasonable departure. Yet the SEC denies applicability of the legal analysis required to prove that and instead adopts the circular position that it may prove unreasonableness by proving a gas violation.
Well, if a gas standard has a reasonableness component to it, you're not saying that they need to have another inquiry of reasonableness upon reasonableness, are you?
Your Honor, due professional care is a standard which is incorporated within GAS.
Right.
It's one of the 10 general standards of GAS. The Commission's position here is that a common law negligence inquiry, and I quote, would confuse aspects of the Commission's rule, would call for an unwarranted inquiry, and would defeat the intended uniformity of GAS.
Now, what they're talking about there is something quite different. They're saying that whether you that if you say, and I'd like to know whether you do, that the standard of care is defined outside of GAS, then what you're doing is setting up an entirely new system. But if you mean instead that the question of negligence depends upon whether a reasonable auditor in the circumstances that your client found himself in would have done X, then we know that reasonable auditors file GAS, and so we use GAS as the measure of the standard of care. That's all the SEC is saying. In their brief, anyway, the opinion is quite clear that they found negligence and then found the violations.
Well, Your Honor, the rule itself says that negligence in applicable professional standards, it sets up two different concepts, the concept of negligence and the concept of applicable professional standards. And there must be a negligent deviation from GAS in order there to be a finding of unreasonable conduct under the rule.
Now, why is that? Why isn't the professional standard? Why doesn't that provide the standard of care, and a departure from that is per se unreasonable?
Negligence tolerates a range of reasonable conduct, reasonable professional conduct under the circumstances.
So you're saying there could be a reasonable violation?
Yes, Your Honor. And we believe that...
Which of the violations alleged here were reasonable violations of the standard?
Your Honor, we don't believe that the opinion properly found unreasonable conduct on Mr. Dearlove's part. Their expert's opinion...
Let me put it this way, of course. Can you identify for me a GAS standard, the violation of which would not be unreasonable per se?
Well, let me quote, for example, the Blue Ribbon panel appointed by the SEC and chaired by Robert Posen, the report of which is in the joint addendum here, in 2008. And that Blue Ribbon panel reported to the SEC first that the accounting profession does not know by what standard the SEC is judging conduct. The panel then says this about gas under the heading Evaluating the Sufficiency of Audit Evidence. Not only must one make a judgment about how to account for a transaction, but the sufficiency of evidence used to support the conclusion must also be evaluated. In practice, this is typically one of the most subjective and difficult judgments to make. The report goes on to say judgments between different knowledgeable, experienced, and objective persons could differ. Such differences between reasonable judgments do not in themselves suggest that one judgment is wrong and the other is correct. And so, Your Honor,
I understand there's a controversy. I'm talking about in this case. Sure. Which were the gas violations that were found that in and of themselves do not constitute per se acts of unreasonableness?
Well, for example, Your Honor, I'll address the issue of the debt reclassifications. Okay, Mr. Dearlove was charged with having failed to ask Ivan Hoffman, the audit manager, more probing questions. They said he should have done more. The transactions at issue were reviewed and audited by the audit staff. Dearlove was not the person to perform the audit steps to review the transaction. No one contends that he was or should have. That work, that audit work, was then reviewed by Ivan Hoffman, the experienced Deloitte & Touche manager who was reviewing that part of the audit staff's work. If Mr. Hoffman had any questions or concerns, Mr. William Caswell, the director of the audit, was between Mr. Hoffman and Mr. Dearlove. The conclusion that Mr. Dearlove should have asked more probing questions.
So you're saying there can be a fit. That was failure to supervise, right? The SEC found a gas violation and failure to adequately supervise. So you're saying failure to supervise may be an example of a breach that's not unreasonable. But also on that same line on debt reclassification, didn't they find a lack of due professional care? And doesn't that necessarily have a reasonableness inquiry?
And certainly, Your Honor, in the context of the audit, that finding has no meaning in this respect. The opinion of the SEC's expert said, and I quote, "In my opinion, Adelphia's 2000 financial statements failed to comply with GAAP, and DNT's audit, comma, under Dearlove's direction, comma, did not comply with GAAP." And so we have a circumstance here where their expert is equating Mr. Dearlove for all purposes as the auditor.
But my question is more basic. When the SEC is examining an auditor's conduct and makes the determination that his conduct lacked due professional care, that has a reasonableness component to it, right? I mean, that's sufficient. You wouldn't ask them to find some other standard for reasonableness there, would you?
No, Your Honor, the Tchaikovsky Court, we believe the Tchaikovsky II Court, addressed that issue and talked about the fact that GAAS had a due professional care component. And they said a negligent audit necessarily violates GAAS, but a GAAS violation standing alone does not establish negligence.
The SEC in this case, on the example you gave of debt reclassification, said that Mr. Dearlove's conduct did not exhibit due professional care. And all I'm saying is that they've made a reasonableness inquiry. Negligence inquiry that you're asking for.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree in this respect.
What is your disagreement?
I disagree that the opinion of their expert would have been sufficient.
That's not.
I'm sorry.
That's a different.
I misunderstood you.
I'm not into sufficiency of evidence. That's a whole different inquiry. What I'm trying to get at is what is the standard that the SEC is supposed to by which it's supposed to operate. You're, as I understand your argument, and I think it's a strong argument, that under 102E you cannot find improper professional conduct mm-hmm. after Chikosky and the rule that was your response to it, unless there's a finding of negligence. Mm-hmm. And my response to that, the question I have is, well, if they've found negligence in this case, they've completed the inquiry required of them.
Well,
and in the example you gave, debt reclassification, they found, I said, lack of due professional care.
Their expert found that GAS was violated with respect to that transaction and other transactions.
Which transaction?
The debt reclassification we were just talking about.
So did the SEC. The SEC yes. found that your client acted negligently mm-hmm. with respect to that
yep.
posting.
The SEC said Mr. Dearlove's departure was at least unreasonable. That's the words
that's
they use.
That's the language yes. of the rule, unreasonable conduct.
That's right. And in the entire 68-page report by Mr. Lesser, the word unreasonable does not appear one time. The word negligent does not appear one time. Mr. Lesser said, I'm opining with respect.
Let's get one thing straight. You start out by arguing a legal proposition, which is that the mm-hmm. SEC never found negligence. Mm-hmm. Now you're saying, yes, the SEC did find negligence, but their expert witness didn't give them any evidence to support that. Which is it?
Pardon me. My position is they rejected a negligence standard, not that they're experts.
Well, let's stick okay. with that for the moment. Okay. And I don't know what you do with statements like the one on page 31 of the SEC's opinion, is 1883 of the joint appendix. A reasonable engagement partner under the circumstances presented here, that's now we're talking negligence, would have developed a much more thorough understanding of Adelphi's accounting for debt than Dearlove did, and would have paid more attention to ensuring that the engagement team was asking the sorts of questions that would have brought matters like the accounting for reclassified debt to light. For example, and it goes on and on and on. That's talking about, that's the negligence standard. I don't know how you read it any other way. So they did find negligence on that. And I've gone through with some attention to this question. I've gone through each one of the four different areas that the SEC has focused on with respect to your client. And there's a negligence finding with respect to each one of them. Now, you may disagree with that, Matt, but that's not the legal question you started this argument with.
Your Honor, respectfully, we believe they conflated the issue of negligence.
What does conflate mean?
Means they substituted or put in place the concept of GAS in the place of common law negligence, which recognizes
But when GAS says that, you know, due professional care, that is a reasonableness inquiry. Why isn't that sufficient?
The due professional care element in GAS, which Mr. Lesser was commenting on, frequently was in the context, if not almost exclusively in the context of he should have had greater professional skepticism. That's his statement. Where is the proof, are we to judge Mr. Dearlove's conduct under the circumstances of this audit, which is something that his articulation doesn't include? And are we to judge the standard of his conduct by what other reasonable accountants would have done, other reasonable accountants in the community would have done under the circumstances?
Yeah, what standard would other reasonable accountants in an audit of this magnitude, what standards would they have followed?
Well, I think they would certainly have given consideration to the complexity and the size of the audit. Mr. Dearlove's expert talks about
what standards. Are there any written standards that they would follow?
Well, certainly GAS standards are standards which would be considered and which an audit plan would be executed toward.
One would hope they would follow. I mean, there are only 9 GAS standards. I mean, it's unlike all these, you know, all the GAAP and FASB's and all the other. There are only 9. And the 230.1 is an overriding standard, the one that Judge Griffith was talking about, that in following all the other GAS standards, you have to use due professional care, right? So if you have violated GAS, mm-hmm. because you didn't use due professional care, you have necessarily violated 102E. But the SEC would say that that doesn't mean that you necessarily have violated 102E, because it has to be more than one violation. Mm-hmm. If you fail to use due professional care on one thing that wasn't overriding and so on and so forth, you haven't violated 102. That's the innovation since Joukowsky in 102, as I see. It's not much of an innovation, but it's there. It means that one negligent act is not going to get you whacked by the SEC, right? Yeah. Right. Now, in any of that, where is the idea that you don't have to show, the SEC is saying you don't have to show negligence? I don't see it.
Well, Your Honor, they characterize the negligence standard as a, quote, somewhat different standard. And what are they talking about if they're saying that it's one and the same? Why are they rejecting the standard? We believe that they're basically saying that any gas violation is sufficient to establish negligence. But Joukowsky's too said,
at least in their brief, they clearly disavow that. They say in their brief that's not what we're doing. I query whether the SEC, in fact, did something different than that, but that's not the argument.
But I read their brief where they say that a negligence standard would confuse aspects of the rule, would call for an unwarranted inquiry, and would defeat the intended uniformity.
That brief is, I must say, with, I'll just put it bluntly, the brief is, and I grant you this, extremely confusing from about page 32 to 34, 35. I mean, I'm with you. I just didn't understand what the point was. Maybe they'll explain it, but the opinion of the SEC, on the other hand, is quite clear. You know, we found negligence, and it's led to this violation, and so on and so forth.
You know, I understand the court's view, Your Honor. We think that in a case of professional negligence, typically you would have testimony of what a reasonable auditor in this community would have done under the circumstances, and you would have testimony about the materiality of the departure and the fact of the departure. Here, we have conclusions that are drawn, and the words, he was at least unreasonable under the circumstances.
Are you saying that any time the SEC brings an action, a disciplinary action, against an auditor, that in order to prove negligence, the SEC must call an expert witness?
Yes.
How can that possibly be? Where does that rule come from? I'll give you an example.
Sure.
I'm an auditor. I'm with one of the big accounting firms, right? And I'm the engagement partner, and I'm auditing General Motors, right? Mm-hmm. And I decide I'm not going into the field. I'm not going to sit in my office in Northern Virginia. And I'm going to play video games all day, and I'm not going to look at any of the reports that any of the individuals put in. And I didn't even look at the audit plan. Somebody else drafted that up, okay? And then there are various violations of GAAP. Now, are you saying that we need an expert witness to testify that that was negligence on the part of the engagement partner? That's ridiculous. That's obvious, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, there is a line of cases where an auditor performs no audit at all or misses the statute of limitations, where the court will find as a matter of law without expert testimony that there has been negligence. However, typically, the interpretation of GAS and what it means in the professional community and how it is applied in the circumstances of the audit is where the testimony must be. How else is the burden of proof carried? In this case,
the test for us, though, is what? In response to your argument, what is our standard of review?
Well, your standard of review on the legal issues.
No. On the issue you're now discussing, whether there was sufficient evidence to prove negligence without an expert witness.
Your Honor, I'm not understanding your question, but I believe
it's substantial evidence,
sure.
Isn't it? It's the usual administrative law substantial evidence test.
Respectfully, if there's not proof to the required legal standard, strike that. If an improper legal standard is used, then you don't get to substantial evidence. Substantial evidence assumes the proper standard was applied in the first instance. But I grant
you. What is the improper legal standard? Are you back to talking about whether the SEC found negligence?
Yes, Your Honor, we are.
All right. Because I don't see that. Maybe you can point me to something in their opinion. Forget about the brief for a minute, but I agree with you. The brief's confusing.
No. Well, for example, when we talked about debt reclassifications, where is the evidence that under the circumstances of a 32-person audit involving 16 different audits going on at one time, that a reasonable engagement partner would have asked a senior manager, quote, more probing questions? Where's the evidence that in the practice, an auditor would be expected to do that? It seems to me, Your Honor, that the reasonableness under the circumstances depends on complexity, depends on novelty of issues. We had a number of issues.
We're way over time in your argument. Judge Ginsburg, do you have any questions before we hear from the SEC?
No, I'll hold off until rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Tracy Harden for the Securities and Exchange Commission. And I want to go straight to what Petitioner has said this morning is the key question in this case, and this is the issue of whether or not the unreasonable conduct inquiry under 102E really does require reference to a separate standard of care, which is what Petitioner's argument seems to be. And really,
Are there gas violations that are not per se unreasonable? Your brief suggests they might be.
There can be.
Are there any here?
No, I think those inquiries really do come to the same conclusion with the standards at issue here. There are some circumstances in which gas violations might result from conduct the Commission may or may not find unreasonable. That's certainly the case with respect to the other professional standards referenced in the rule, GAAP or Commission regulations. And so the Commission properly drew its rule to cover all of those situations. But I think the Court really put its finger on the issue here this morning in saying that, you know, as the Commission explained in its adopting release, the reference to unreasonable conduct is really a reference to a standard of culpability, not a standard of care. The standard of care is provided by the professional standards referenced in the rule. And as the Commission explained in its opinion, to reference a separate standard of care, as Petitioner contends, would really render the unreasonable conduct inquiry superfluous. As the Court has already noted this morning, the question of what a reasonable auditor might do in a given situation is already encompassed in GAAS standards, and therefore there's no need to ask the question again as part of the unreasonable conduct inquiry.
Counsel, if I may, do I understand you to just say that the unreasonable conduct inquiry goes to culpability?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think, you know, that can be seen in both the structure of the rule and the history of the rule in terms of its response to the Joukowsky opinions. But if you look at the structure of this provision of the rule, the unreasonable conduct provision mirrors the structure of both the earlier subsections, the knowing or intentional conduct resulting in violations of professional standards or highly unreasonable conduct.
I don't understand what that means, goes to culpability. What do you mean by that? You have a structure, and I don't have the rule in front of me, but you've got unreasonable conduct, you've got highly unreasonable conduct, you've got recklessness, and you've got knowing, right?
That's correct.
Now, do you say all those go to culpability?
That's right, Your Honor. I mean, it's...
And they also go to liability. And, you know, one person that commits unreasonable conduct, the other commits reckless conduct. They both have violated the rule, right?
That's correct, but...
So what is it? I don't understand
what I'm
how
trying
that
to
helps
dis-
you to,
what
to
I'm
say,
try-
well, it's, you know, it just goes to culpability.
You know, we can put it in terms of degree of deviation from the standard of care or mental state, but all I'm really trying to do is point out that the provision for unreasonable conduct is not meant to encompass a separate standard of care that would be independently proven in every case, which is what petitioner's argument is here.
What does that mean? You mean you can... Are you saying that you could find a violation of 102E even if you found no unreasonable conduct?
Absolutely not.
Then what did... I don't understand what you just said. It doesn't establish a standard of care for every case? Of course it does.
Well, I think maybe we're using the terms a little differently. What I'm intending to say is that the unreasonable conduct inquiry really goes to assessing the reasonableness of the conduct or, in respect to other provisions of the rule, whether it was intentional or reckless, in comparison to the standards
in the
articulated release, in GAS.
In the SEC's release, this rule applies not only to accountants in their capacity as accountants or auditors or whatever. It also applies to attorneys and whatever other professionals want. But I know in the release, the release said, well, we're revising the rule, and what we have to say here in our release is it deals only with CPAs, right? But the rule on the face of it also deals with attorneys, right?
Well, not as revised. This provision of the rule specifically says improper professional conduct with respect to accountants encompasses and then outlines, as you said.
Okay.
So on the face of the rule, this provision only applies to accountants.
All right.
And that's also clarified in the release, as you said. So.
Could you just explain what you mean by culpability here as an independent element?
Well, I mean, perhaps this could be analogized to a normal tort case where you have a standard of care and then a separate question of whether this is an intentional tort or a negligence tort. And that really goes to the culpability of the defendant, or here the petitioner, whether it is knowing, reckless, highly unreasonable, or unreasonable. But that inquiry doesn't change the basic standards against which you're measuring the petitioner's conduct. And here, those standards are GAS. Now, in other cases, they could be GAP or commission regulations.
It seems to me that you have complicated this case so much, worrying about all this theoretical, you know, what would happen here. Look, the SEC found negligence here in four different areas. It spoke the language of negligence. It pointed to evidence in the record dealing with negligence. It made a specific finding, and then it summarized those findings in a separate section toward the end of the opinion. There is no question about it. Therefore, the only issue here is, number one, did the SEC misinterpret GAS? Did the SEC have sufficient evidence to find negligence? They are not legal questions. Well, maybe the interpretation of GAS is a legal question, but as far as the sufficiency of the evidence is concerned, it's a factual question. So what is all this, culpability and parsing? I don't get it.
Well, Your Honor, I think we were really trying to make sense of and respond to the argument that the petitioner made. I think you're right that the commission's opinion is very clear that it engaged in the full inquiry it was required to under the provisions of the rule. And certainly in our brief or in our argument this morning, we're not trying to alter that in any way. I think really we were just trying to make sense of petitioner's contention that there needed to be some proof of a standard of care outside of GAS.
If violation of applicable professional standards, if violations of GAS here are per se unreasonable, what role does the first prong in subsection 2 play, saying repeated instances of unreasonable conduct?
Well, I think there are probably two roles it plays. The first Judge Randolph already referenced, which is the repeated.
Repeated, exactly.
And that is a distinction, I think, to clarify that a single act of simple negligence is not going to subject you to discipline.
You said repeated violations of applicable professional standards.
But the other issue is, as I referenced earlier, the applicable professional standards do encompass more than GAS. And GAS itself may have some provisions that can be violated through conduct in which you can debate the reasonableness. And GAAP and commission regulations, you can certainly see that possibility more clearly. And so what that provision of the rule does is add an additional inquiry in cases in which a violation of the applicable professional standards may not be unreasonable.
So a violation of GAAP
exactly
would not be actionable here unless it was unreasonable.
Exactly. And in fact, the inclusion of that inquiry, for the most part, is going to redound in favor of petitioners or accountants subject to the rule. Beyond that,
the curious thing is, if you go to, I'm just looking once again at 230 of GAS, which requires due professional care in the planning and performance of the audit and the preparation of the report. Well, there's nothing else. That covers everything, right? That's due professional care in planning, performance, and preparation of the report. And then in explaining why that's so, the writers of the of GAS quote at length Cooley on torts, and they quote the negligence standard that's applicable in common law. Right, so that section 230, which covers everything, sets a negligence standard. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think this court already recognized in Shikoski that a negligent audit, by definition, is going to violate GAS because of that overriding due professional care standard. All we're saying is that there are other standards within GAS, and there may be circumstances in which you can debate the reasonableness of the conduct that leads to a violation.
Did the SEC make that point that you're making right now, that that the phrase applicable professional standards might include standards that don't have a reasonableness inquiry built into them? Did they make that?
Well, that's certainly outlined in the adopting release for the rule. I mean, the adopting release
I'm talking about the opinion that we're reviewing right now. I don't recall, maybe they did. Someone pointed out it was 68 pages, but I don't recall them making that that point that you're making now.
I believe there's a footnote in the opinion that just quotes the release's definition of what improper professional standards are, applicable professional standards are, but I don't think they linked that up to his argument here in the same way.
In that line, do you think we then have a Chenery problem here, at the very least?
I don't believe so, because the commission very clearly explained the inquiry it was applying in this case, and it explained in response to his argument that there needs to be some separate standard of care. It explained that GAS is the applicable standard of care. So the commission very clearly addressed the question presented by the petitioner. Okay. And the rest is just an interpretation of the rule, which, certainly the commission has already spoken to in its adopting release. If the court has no other questions, I just wanted to briefly touch on petitioner's continuing reference to the division's expert report. And I wanted to just make clear that there's a distinction between the expert report presented by the division and the findings of the commission. And in the commission's opinion, it very clearly, as this court has stated a number of times this morning, found unreasonable conduct in each of these areas.
Is there any commission law on whether you need expert opinion evidence in order to establish negligence?
There are certainly commission cases on whether you need expert opinions to find violations of GAAP standards, and those are cited in the commission's opinion. Also, the commission's, the 34 Act itself under 10A gives the commission.
On the GAAP question, the expert testimony wouldn't be about standard of care. It would be the expert testimony would be the interpretation of GAAP. Either it's consistent with GAAP or it's not consistent with GAAP. Period. That's all, right?
Right. Okay. Right.
But what I'm asking is whether there's any commission law about whether you need an expert witness to establish negligent departure from standards.
I'm not aware of a commission opinion off the top of my head, but certainly as as framed by the petitioner and as framed by the court this morning, the question of whether expert testimony is needed really goes to whether it would assist the fact finder. And
what about in state proceedings? You know, state proceedings go on all the time, and we're used to SEC and public companies and so on and so forth, but you know, every CPA is licensed by a particular state, and there are disciplinary proceedings that go on. Is there any indication? Do you know what the law is in the various states about this?
Actually, I don't know the answer to that. I'm sorry. I'd be happy to provide the court with an answer later. If the court has no further questions, we'll rest on our brief. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, I think you have no time, but we'll give you 3 minutes. Because we took up your time with questions. 3 minutes to respond to
the
SEC's arguments.
The state question. It used to be, I remember on the first Joukowsky case, that I think we did some research and found that 35 states don't discipline auditors unless there's been gross negligence. But that meant 15 states would allow the simple negligence. But do you know of any law? Any state law that deals with the question of whether you need expert testimony to establish negligence?
We cited in our brief, Your Honor, cases to that effect, state law to that effect. I'm unaware of any commission opinions that directly deal with the question.
You cited some state cases? Where's that? I missed that, sir.
I was trying to define that. I believe when we spoke our brief under FAS 125, in the absence of any expert testimony about the meaning of that provision and the fact that their expert didn't opine on it, I think we cited some cases in that section.
But that's a different question. That's the interpretation of the okay, I remember that, yeah.
Okay.
But that's not a GAS standard.
Correct. That wasn't a GAS standard issue. I believe we cited one case, Michigan, that said that the plaintiff has created the aura that every GAS violation establishes negligence. Neither the case law nor the accounting literature support that proposition. It's a Michigan case.
You know, there's an inherent ambiguity in the argument. And the more I hear the arguments on both sides, I think that maybe the part of the confusion is driven by this ambiguity. The ambiguity is, what do you mean by a GAS violation, right? If you just took a look at AU whatever and it says that you have to make inquiry and detect or try to detect fraud and you've got to take and you have to have reasonable assurance that these statements and some accountant just gets totally bamboozled by the CFO of the corporation and you know, takes these numbers. Now, one might say, because you have allowed reporting that is based on phony numbers, you violated GAS, right? Mm-hmm. And the other person would say, no, wait a minute now. I don't have to be perfect. I just have to exercise due professional care. And I wasn't negligent. This guy was a con artist, right? So part of the confusion or that's going on here between the SEC and your side may be due to what do you mean by a violation of GAS?
I think so, Your Honor. And, you know, one sort of analogy I could draw would be this. Judges are required to interpret the Constitution and apply the statutes of the United States. Nobody of the right mind would suggest simply because a reviewing court modified or reversed an opinion of a trial judge, which is supposed to apply that same rule, that is evidence of negligence on the part of, you know, the trial judge.
Nobody,
and yet,
I don't know that nobody would say
well, no fair-minded person would say that. So, Your Honor, certainly we have a disagreement about whether there's a distinction under the rule between GAS and negligence. The rule draws the distinction, and certainly counsel's suggesting that you would have a symmetry under the rule where you would need it. You would need to prove negligence and also a GAAP violation, but for GAS, you wouldn't need to prove common law negligence. You could simply prove the GAS violation. We think the Joukowsky 2 rejection of every gas, or not, failure to adopt the proposition that every gas violation establishes negligence, conflicts with that idea. And I'll close with this, Your Honor. The SEC is still unable to articulate the standards that have been applied here, or an interpretation we believe consistent with the rule. The power the SEC wields under 102E is life-altering, and it has deprived Mr. Dearlove of his ability to earn a living. It's our view that when the SEC drafts a rule, it must follow it, and the consequences of government action without restraint and without standards is awful and sometimes, unfortunately, irreversible. We ask the petition be granted and the order vacated. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Case is submitted.
Stand, please. This honorable court will now stand adjourned until tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, 9:30 a.m.